Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today, we'll discuss the article by Vermeulen et al. Titled, Inhibitory Actions of the NRG1 ERB-B4 Pathway and Macrophages During Tissue Fibrosis in the Heart, Skin, and Lung. This article was published November 1st, 2017. Joining me today are Deputy Editor Mary Lindsay, authors Vincent Segers and Gilles de Coulinar, and content expert Amy Bradshaw. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara. Well, it was known that neuroregulin 1 has direct effects on cardiac fibroblasts to prevent excess extracellular matrix accumulation. Whether neuroregulin 1 also had effects on macrophages had not been examined. Vincent, tell us why you thought this was an important aspect to evaluate.
Neuroregulin is a well-known growth factor with cardioprotective properties in different forms of heart failure. In the past, most studies focused on the direct effects of neuroregulin on cardiomyocytes. And as you said, in the last couple of years, it has become clear that the neuroregulin also has effects on other cell types in the heart, including cardiac fibroblasts. And it has become clear that neuroregulin prevents extracellular matrix accumulation in different forms of cardiac hypertrophy and heart failure. Fibrosis is a complex phenomenon that plays a role in many different chronic diseases. And what is interesting is that in almost all forms of fibrosis, infiltration of macrophages plays a crucial role. So we speculated that neuroregulin might not only have a direct effect on cardiac fibroblasts, but also on macrophages present in the inflammatory phase of cardiac fibrosis. So in this paper, we examined the therapeutic effect of neuroregulin on cardiac fibrosis and inflammation, but we also examined the effect of a macrophage-specific knockout of ERB4 on cardiac fibrosis. And ERB4 is one of the main receptors for neuroregulin 1.
Okay, so it was a natural, logical extension to now look at the macrophage. A second hypothesis evaluated was that in addition to cardiac fibrosis, neuroregulin 1 could be active in models of skin and lung fibrosis as well. Gilles, tell us what was the rationale for going outside the heart?
Well, in fact, Mary, it was a pretty accidental discovery. And you know, after listening to a talk by Eric Colson, in which he used cultured mouse tail fibroblast as an easy model to study fibrosis, we wondered whether neuroregulin would also be active in the skin and in this tail fibroblast. So we just tried it in the lab, and to our own surprise, it worked. So not only skin, but later on also lung fibroblasts seem to express ERB receptors and to respond to neuroregulin. This now basically leads to the concept that neuroregulin physiology is much broader than we anticipated, acting as a modulatory factor in pretty much every organ, I believe.
Excellent. I love accidental discoveries. That's awesome. Amy, why is ECM accumulation important to study in these organs in particular?
Well, I think that we all appreciate that the extracellular matrix has some very common factors when it comes to depositing collagen, but each tissue has a very specific function for its extracellular matrix. So the skin has a very different collagen requirement than the heart, for example. But we both know that mechanisms that give rise to aberrant overaccumulation of collagen in both of these tissues share some common mechanisms. And a lot of that work's been found out through, again, accidental discoveries using transgenic mice, I think, and that people, you know, made the observations that fibrosis could be generally inhibited in a number of different tissues. So although we know there are very unique aspects to lung and skin and heart collagen deposition, it's all becoming increasingly clear that they also share some common mechanisms. And many of these might be, in fact, driven by macrophages.
I see. And Amy, you're definitely a prime example of accidental discoveries when you noticed that the spark knockout mice had different phenotypes once the tails were allowed to grow and genotyping wasn't occurring. So we're hearing a common theme in this podcast is that paying attention to accidental discoveries can lead to new avenues of research. Okay, guys, let's shift gears a little bit. I want to talk about fibrosis. Personally, I don't like to use that term because I think it's too nonspecific and doesn't differentiate subtypes. For example, there's interstitial and there's perivascular fibrosis, there's reparative and there's replacement fibrosis. At the same time, though, I use it all the time myself in articles and in, especially in reviews, because readers who aren't in the field understand it at least to some level and are comfortable with it. Vincent, can you tell us whether the, quote, fibrosis blocked by the neuregulin-1 treatment in your Ang-2 cardiac model, was it interstitial only, or did you observe any changes in the perivascular levels of collagen?
Well, the fibrotic response we observed in the angiotensin-2 model was mostly interstitial. So it is difficult to state whether neuregulin would influence perivascular fibrosis. It wasn't that clear. What was interesting is that we did observe a more pronounced interstitial but also perivascular fibrosis in mice in which the ERBB4 receptor was knocked out in macrophages. So this would indicate that the neuregulin ERBB4 system seems to play a role in perivascular fibrosis as well.
Okay, very, very cool. Amy, do you want to add anything about using the term fibrosis?
I'm always on my soapbox about extracellular matrix being unique and different and getting away from these general terms, similar to getting away from the general term fibroblast, right? We know that fibroblasts are very different depending on their tissue of origin. And I think that, you know, when you talk about an accumulation of collagen, just in the heart, for example, in a pressure overload hypertrophy, for example, where you get thickened walls versus the dilated cardiomyopathy where you get the thinner walls, both of those result in a net increase in collagen deposition in the tissue. But I think that we can appreciate that probably the matrix that's laid down in those two cases is very different, particularly maybe in terms of cross-linking and components. So yeah, I'm with you, Mary. Fibrosis is too general. It's what we all fall back on. But I'm hoping that we can move forward from that and really start to characterize some of the intrinsic differences in the matrix in terms of not just a general increase in collagen deposition.
I agree. I think that as the field develops, the nomenclature will be refined on many levels. Gilles, let's talk a little bit about signaling for a minute. Neuregulin-1 activated the ERBB4 receptor in isolated macrophages, which then also subsequently inhibited PI3 kinase and AKT, as well as STAT3 signaling. Why did you focus on these particular signaling mediators?
Well, Mary, neuregulin was already known to act through the PI3 kinase AKT pathway in other cell types, usually activating it, so that wasn't really a difficult choice. But here in this study, we found that in inflammatory cells, neuregulin inhibited the AKT pathway, which was a surprise. So on the other hand, for the JAK-STAT pathway, it popped up during an explorative gene array analysis that we performed to find out which molecular networks were affected by neuregulin. And we now believe that the JAK-STAT pathway is really involved in the anti-inflammatory effects by neuregulin, although we really have to still prove it.
I see. So that's an example where even if you think you know what the result's going to be based on literature and other cell types, you still need to do the actual experiment in your cell type to see if it's similar or, in this case, it actually ended up being different. So Amy, this study challenges a number of conceptual paradigms, one of which is that the beneficial effects of neuregulin-1 in the adult myocardium are due to effects on non-myocytes and independent of ERBB2. And so at the beginning, Vincent mentioned that originally the work on neuregulin-1 circled around the myocyte. Would you say that this focus now on the non-myocyte functions is the most interesting aspect of this study?
I would certainly say it's one of the most interesting aspects of the study. It did strike me that when you guys compared the collagen deposition between the neuregulin treated and then the ERBB4 specific knockout in the macrophages, the effects of the NRG did seem to be a little bit more so than the absence of just ERBB4 in the macrophages, just in terms of collagen deposition. So I think that probably speaks to the fact that other cells are involved in the collagen deposition. But I just thought it was fascinating and really cool the way all these cells seem to be talking to each other, right? So they seem to all be trying to basically get to the same place, but using these different signaling molecules to fine-tune their responses to give a tissue response. That's what I thought was really cool.
Okay, Vincent, did you want to follow up on that and maybe discuss neuroregulin 1 effects on the macrophage versus the fibroblasts and what you think the primary contribution is?
Well, I agree that neuroregulin seems to be acting on both cell types. Both cell types, both the fibroblasts, both the macrophage express the ERBB4 receptor, and both cell types are clearly responsive to neuroregulin 1. In cell culture experiments, neuroregulin 1 clearly inhibits both macrophage and fibroblasts activation. And in this article, we also show that when the ERBB4 receptor is knocked out in macrophages, there is more fibrosis in heart and in skin. But we also recently made a fibroblast-specific ERBB4 knockout mouse as well, in which we see very similar results as the one we see with the macrophage-specific knockout. So we have comprehensive evidence that neuroregulin has effects on both cell types.
Okay, very good. Jill, what are the next steps from here?
Well, for us, this paper is really important. It's an important step in our lab. We are both cardiologists, Vincent and I, and we really started to study the neuroregulin pathway from the point of heart failure and very concentrated to the heart. But now that we have these data in this paper, we think that the physiology of the neuroregulin ERBB pathway is much more widespread than we ever estimated before, stretching beyond the nervous system where it was discovered and the heart. We should also not forget that neuroregulin is in fact synthesized by microvascular endothelial cells, and altogether, neuroregulin now emerges as a paracrine factor released by the endothelium, probably in a feedback loop to control organ inflammation and repair. And this is conceptually quite novel, and I believe that this concept should be further explored. How and when is neuroregulin activated, in which organs? Is neuroregulin still released in the dysfunctional endothelium, for example? Which diseases are counteracted by neuroregulin ERBB signaling in different organs, and so on. And as a last point, we really focused on the role of the ERBB4 receptor, but, you know, perhaps there's also a role for the ERBB3 receptor, so that is not clear yet.
Well, don't forget that AJP Heart has a current call for papers out focused on cardiovascular extracellular matrix. Deadline is February 1st, 2018. Gilles and Vincent, thank you for publishing this very interesting article on AJP Heart. Amy, thank you for discussing it with us. Back to you, Kara.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology podcast. For more podcasts like this, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.